Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
The Deliberative Corridor today has evolved into two areas. First, you should look at it as a corridor, as a very important tool for the economic integration of the region. And second, the concept of the Lobito Corridor also has evolved.
Angola's foreign minister says the Lobito Corridor project is an important infrastructure measure that will boost regional integration.
The polls are supposed to close at 9, but they then extended beyond 9, which is allowed by Section 93, which says that if you're in the queue before 9 o'clock, even though the polls are supposed to close at 9, you're allowed to remain and continue voting.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia allows voters to continue to cast their ballots on Saturday.
You know, presence of France in most of this African region is tactical colonization. Let them go and let's see if Africa can stand alone, because I strongly believe that most of these African countries have the capability and capacity to stand alone, because the terrorist guys are not stronger than the state government or the federal government. So, and let's see what happens moving forward from now.
And Chad ends defense cooperation agreement with France. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. President Joe Biden's visit to Angola, the first by a U.S. president to the Southwest African nation, centers around a rail corridor that will transport valuable minerals from the heart of the continent to a burgeoning Angolan port. He also will stress the need for stability and democracy to power the continent's engines of growth. VOA White House correspondent Anita Power reports from Washington.
Angola's president is a prominent figure on the continent, using his status as leader of a subcontinental oil giant to build influence and to work to settle regional conflicts. Now President João Lourenço welcomes a new and powerful friend, hosting President Joe Biden for the first visit to Angola by an American president. Biden will use the visit to highlight a major U.S. finance development project, the 1,300-kilometer Lobito Rail Corridor, which connects the mineral-rich African interior to the southwestern port. The U.S. says it has pulled together more than $3 billion in public and private money in U.S. investment on this project. The White House says the relationship between the two nations is undergoing a true transformation as they become closer partners. Karine Jean-Pierre is White House Press Secretary.
Together, the United States and Angola are working to address a full spectrum of pressing challenges, from narrowing the infrastructure gap in Africa and growing economic opportunities and sustainable development in the region, to expanding technologies and scientific cooperation, bolstering peace and security, strengthening food security.
Some analysts say Biden's 2022 vow to visit Africa is well past due. Biden originally planned to visit Angola in October, but the incoming Hurricane Milton forced him to postpone. Cameron Hudson is a senior fellow in the Africa program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think coming as it does at the very tail end of his administration, without much to, I think, really celebrate in terms of his involvement in Africa, I think the visit will ring rather hollow.
Lourenço and Biden don't agree on everything. While Biden's support of Israel is ironclad, Angola aligns more with the Global South's view.
Israel has the right to defend itself and protect the lives of its citizens, but the same right applies to the Palestinians, who have been living under occupation for decades, an unacceptable situation.
But one thing that they and China agree on is the urgent need for African development. China has deep inroads in the continent with its larger, more established Belt and Road Initiative. Here is a Chinese development official citing their track record over the past decade. Xi Jinping is director of China's Regional Opening Department and the National Development and Reform Commission.
Over the past 11 years, Chinese enterprises have participated in the construction and renovation of more than 10,000 kilometers of railways, nearly 100,000 kilometers of highways, nearly 1,000 bridges, about 100 ports, 66,000 kilometers of power transmission and transformation lines, and 150,000 kilometers of backbone communication networks in various African countries.
Analysts say this is not a good position for the continent to be in. While this foray to Africa's Golden Shores is a first for Biden, it is also, in a way, a final chapter. This is likely his last foreign trip, his farewell to the world as U.S. president. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Angola's foreign minister is hailing the renewed focus of the Lobito Corridor project as an important infrastructural measure for the country and a significant boost to regional integration. Tete Antonio also expressed confidence in the economic benefit of the project on Angola and neighboring countries, including Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC. His remarks come days ahead of the historic visit of U.S. President Joe Biden to Angola on December 2nd. The Lobito Corridor, a $2.3 billion rail project that connects Zambia and the Democratic Republic of Congo to the Atlantic Ocean, is seen as one of the most important transport infrastructures that the United States has helped develop in Africa. In a wide-ranging interview, the Angolan Foreign Minister Tete Antonio also talks to me about his country's mediation efforts to resolve tensions between the governments in Kinshasa and Kigali. Here is part one of the conversation.
The Lobito Corridor has been there since the colonial times. You know, the Lobito Corridor is also linked to our own history. It has gone through difficult times because of the 27 years of war we had in this country. But soon after the war, we repaired this railway going from the port of Lobito to the border with Zambia. But the Lobito Corridor today has evolved into two areas. First, you should look at it as a corridor, as a very important tool for the economic integration of the region. And second, the concept of the Lobito Corridor also has evolved, as it is only, we look at the Lobito Corridor not as a single railway to transport the raw materials, but also it is a pool of development. Along the Lobito Corridor, many of our opportunities are going to be developed, including the agriculture, so we can link our agricultural capacity of production, not only for Angola, but even thinking of exportation. We are talking already to some partners who are very interested also in this layer of agriculture. We can't develop if we don't look at, we put our weight on the construction of infrastructure.
Initially, you made mention of the fact that it was a colonial era kind of measure or move. So how different is this time, especially having a heavy investment into the Lobito Corridor, in even talking about extension to join it with the Tanzania as well?
Well, let me just tell you history of colonial infrastructures, how they were designed, many of them. They were designed with the need of transportation. If you have, for example, mines somewhere, so we need infrastructure built to carry the mines. I will just give you an example of a copper mine in one of our provinces, which was actually abandoned because the colonial master could not build a railroad to take it to the ocean. So, but the change is what I said about the concept we have today about the Lobito Corridor being not only a railroad to transport goods and people, certainly, but also a pool of development, meaning bringing in other opportunities along the Lobito Corridor.
You also made mention of the Lobito Corridor as a means of Africa's integration. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, if you look at our first document in SADC, I'm just taking one vision, is the SADC has a division of labor. We had a division of labor, and we were talking already on corridors. You take PIDA also, which is a program of the African Union for Nepal. You will find the same philosophy of corridors as a tool for economic integration, because you cannot talk today about the free trade area, well, the continental free trade zone, without having how to carry the goods how to carry the people without having infrastructure, having railroad and roads. Just take an example of how things simulate in a, just take the flights, how we fly to many of our countries. And sometimes you have to go to Europe for the come back to the African continent. You take the railroad is the same scenario. So we cannot talk about economic integration if we don't integrate physically. Integration means building roads and railroads and also making sure that we can fly from another capital to another one. So people can circulate and goods also can circulate.
As you know, peace and security and stability is key to having the benefits of these measures being enjoyed by the Angolan people. Talk to me about peace and security in Angola vis-a-vis some of the efforts Angola is making to ensure that members in your region are politically peaceful and stable.
Peace and security is actually the core, right, at the core of our policy as a government, but also as a country. You know, there is a saying in Africa, it's only someone who had a wound on the tongue knows the taste of the blood. So we have had it. I just talked about 27 years of war. So we learned our lesson, and we would like to also give to others what we got as solidarity first. And second, if we can help people to go to avoid, for example, 27 years we had in Angola, if you can end a conflict at the table for in a short time, why not to do it instead of going around fighting and then come back to the center?
Tete Antonio is Angola's foreign minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Luanda. Join us on Sunday for the conclusion of the conversation. The Electoral Commission of Namibia allowed voters to cast their ballots on Saturday, days after polls were scheduled to have closed. Local and international media report that administrative challenges, equipment failures, and long lines made it difficult for voters to participate in the elections. But the electoral body says it has resolved the challenges, paving the way for those not able to cast their ballot on Wednesday to do so on Friday and Saturday. But some political parties are threatening legal action, saying the Electoral Commission and the government violated the Constitution. This as the citizens choose a new president and National Assembly. For the latest development, I reach attorney Henry Shimutukweni. He is an expert on Namibia's electoral law.
The voting day was set for the 27th of November, 2024. And when it was set like that, it was set in terms of Section 63 and Section 64 of the Electoral Act of 2014, which says that the president must not at least 15 days before the particular day determine what day is going to be the voting day. And this day is published in what we call the Government Gazette, which he did in September, on the 26th of September 2024. So on that particular day, when the polls opened, it would appear that there was quite a lot of administrative issues which were reported. There was issues with some polling stations not having sufficient ballot papers. There were issues with long queues. There were issues with tallying machines overheating and so forth. So it then, factually, what then happened was that the polling was supposed to close at, the polls were supposed to close at 9, but they then extended beyond 9, which is allowed by Section 93, which says that if you're in the queue before 9 o'clock, even though the polls are supposed to close at 9, you're allowed to remain and continue voting. People then stayed for a very long time, till early hours in the morning. Some stayed till as late as the next day, which was the 28th. And then on the 28th, very odd, the Electoral Commission in the evening then makes an announcement and says that no, they've made a recommendation to the president that because there was these administrative glitches and some people didn't get to vote, they are now going to, and I'm using inverted commas, extend the elections to the 29th and the 30th. Now, if one has careful reference to Section 63 and 64 of the Act, one is not really sure as to what powers the President used to extend that. If you read the Gazette carefully, which the notice which is published in the Gazette, he says that he's making an amendment to his previous proclamation. But that still would not make sense, because it says that if you determine a voting day, you need to give notice of that, you being the president, at least 15 days before that particular day.
All right, so Harry, the question people are asking is, and I've heard some opposition groups says they're going to seek legal redress in court because they thought that the Constitution was undermined by the processes. What are your thoughts as a lawyer?
Yes, I too, having looked at the proclamation that the president, in which he purports to extend something which had already closed, and seeing that there wasn't 15 days given notice for determining those new days, and further seeing that there wasn't even sufficient time because of the 15 days for the other parties to deploy their polling agents, their party agents to those stations to monitor those elections, I do believe that we are dealing with a serious violation of our Constitution and the Electoral Act. There are no powers within the Electoral Act which empower the president to do what he did.
What are your thoughts on how the Electoral Commission of Namibia handled the entire administration of these presidential and legislative or national assembly elections? Because a lot of people have complained that they were in line for long periods of time, system failure, administrative failures. Were they not efficiently prepared for these elections?
Yes, one can say that all parties generally have consensus that the Electoral Commission of Namibia failed to properly administer their functions, which they are given not purely, out of excitement, but these are powers which they are given by the Constitution and strengthened by the Electoral Act. And they failed the political parties, the Namibian population and voters significantly. And they, in essence, denied political parties their fair participation, denied voters their fair participation, and denied citizens, even those who choose not to vote, to have a system which is supposed to deliver a government which people can have confidence in.
Henry Shimutwikeni is an expert on Namibia's electoral law. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. In Uganda, the leader of the opposition Uganda People's Congress, or UPC, says nothing will stop him from running as a presidential candidate in the next general election. Parliament member Jimmy Akena says he plans to soon propose better policies than those of the ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, which he contends would lead to his victory in the presidential vote. This as the Electoral Commission compiles a voter list to be used for the general election in 2026. For more about his plans to be a presidential candidate and his electoral prospects, I read Jimmy Akena.
The issue which I raised was that nothing is going to prevent me from contesting for the presidency, because there have been attempts to try and literally, I would say, force me out of the race. But I was assuring the members and the country at large that we are on a path where we're going to present different policy set of how we hope the country will be run post-2026. And we're going to do everything to make sure that the people of Uganda listen to alternative views, and we move ahead towards an election which we hope and pray will be free and fair.
But what makes you confident that your candidacy will inspire confidence among Ugandans to choose you as the next president?
I have put the NRM on notice. The issues which they have been claiming over the years of what they have done for Uganda, and I can prove it empirically that a lot of what they talk about is nonsense. From the very beginning, where they say from 1986 they're able to do this and that, we're going to be able to prove it. That's a lot of the ideas which they claim to have generated were actually plagiarized. On top of that, we're having a situation whereby there is an extreme level of iniquity in the society. The social, many of the social services are not available to a huge population. And therefore, we need to really address it, that we can have equitable development across the board so that we can develop as a country and be able to share in the benefits which we have been blessed with.
But you are going to be one among many aspiring presidential candidates to challenge incumbent President Yoweri Museveni. The question is, he has been winning elections all this while. The opposition appears splintered, with many of you having the same objective but not united. What makes you think that history will not repeat itself?
Now, in this election, we have been running a presidential system. At this moment, we are not sure exactly what is going to happen, because there have been talk from the Minister of Justice that we're going to go for a parliamentary system. The president has been talking about electronic voting, and all of these are signs that not all is well on the side of the NRM. They are not approaching this election with the confidence which they have demonstrated. The president himself is on record saying that the Electoral Commission, that 1 million votes were stolen in the last general, last presidential election. Now, 1 million votes represents more than 10% of the vote. Therefore, there's a credibility issue among the Electoral Commission, and all these questions show, at least for me as somebody who's been in politics, that there's a lot of discomfort on the side of the government. And we're going to ensure that many of these things are brought to their logical conclusion. But most of all, we intend to have an honest conversation as to where the country can be, where the country has been, and where we are going to go. So on that one, I'm very confident. And depending on the system which is available, on a presidential system, there is absolutely no problem having multiple candidates, because the way the constitution is, the first round is, to win in the first round, you need 50 plus one. I am quite certain President Museveni cannot get 50 plus one in 2026. Now, if that is the case, the top two candidates will go for a second round, and that will be determined by the voters themselves. So whatever the case, we go for first round, and if we're going for second round, we'll go for second round.
Jimmy Akena is the leader of the opposition Uganda People's Congress, or UPC. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Burundi, a political analyst is welcoming the decision of the government to release some 4,000 prisoners in a move to reduce overcrowding in the country's jails. Innocent Muhoozi also is calling on the government to consider political prisoners as part of the jail decongestion campaign. His remarks come after the president, Evariste Ndayishimiye, announced that only minor offenders will benefit from the pardon. The president also says the release of the prisoners will help the administration save money. For analysis on the latest development, I reach Innocent Muhoozi.
It's a good thing that people be recover their freedom from the jails. There are a lot, thousands of people who are in jail where they should not be. Okay, it's a good thing that the president gave this order to release more than 4,000 of them. But until now, there are some have been released, but some other who should be released since long time, as they finished the terms of their imprisonment, still in jail.
What do you mean by that? Are you talking about political prisoners? Because some of the critics,
some military men, some policemen, people who should not be there, some are there. They even finish the term to be in jail, but they don't want to release them. This is one thing that is really hard to understand.
Supporters of the ruling party are saying that these political prisoners committed a crime. If they didn't do anything wrong, they will not find themselves there.
No, not at all, because some people are in jail for so-called political crimes that they have never committed. They have never been fair, per se. So they are in jail just because they want to neutralize them. They put them there. They say, you committed this crime, and you cannot have a fair process. Some other ones have been charged with the same accusation. They have been given 7, 8, 10 years of imprisonment. They finished it since years but they keep them in jail. So it cannot work, what they are saying. It cannot work.
You know, the government is saying that about 5,000 prisoners in total are due to be released from prison population. And some people are even suggesting that it will reduce about 40% of the population of prisoners in Burundi, which will save the government a lot of money, they said. Your thoughts?
No, they spend almost no money. But if you see the condition people are in those jails, it's almost Makala, the Kinshasa one. It's almost, it's not like that, but it's almost this. They don't spend almost no money. The families, they give food and so on, but it's the conditions are inhuman conditions. But it's good still, it's a good thing that they release this part of them, but not political prisoners. It's a good thing that the population of those people in jail are reduced, but what about those who are in jail for their opinion, their political opinions?
Innocent Mohoze is a Burundian political analyst. He spoke with me from the Belgian capital, Brussels. The United States Department of State has reported that Burundi has a record of repressing the political opposition, including jailing critics. In a 2023 report on Burundi, the State Department said Burundi's government denies jailing people for their political beliefs, but that it charged people with crimes against state security. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, a global security analyst says Chad's decision to end a defense cooperation agreement with France is a big blow to the administration in Paris. The move, Dixon Osagie says, is a major turning point in relations between the two countries. France was a colonial ruler until Chad gained independence in 1960. Announcing the end of the agreement, a representative of the Chadian government says the decision will allow the West African country to redefine its priorities for analysis and impact on the fight against terrorism in the Sahel region. I reach global security analyst Dixon Osagie.
It's a major blow to France because France has left Mali, they left Burkina Faso and Niger. Now Chad has taken a departure from their marital bliss with France. I think it's a major blow to France, and the reason why these African countries are taking a departure from the relationship they had with France is disturbing. Moving forward, we need to learn from the reason why most of these guys are leaving, because the Africa has been ravaged with terrorism, and a lot of people think that most of these Western countries, you know, have hands in it, and they are trying to take a departure, break the relationship they had with France. So it's a disturbing situation. I think it's a big blow to France.
Well, Dixon, some people are suggesting that France has played an integral role in the fight against terrorism or armed military groups in the Sahel region, and this could even have an impact on it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree. I will not come here to say France haven't played any role. France has played a major role. But the issue is this. Your essence of terrorism management is to bring the situation or the territory to a state of peace. But we haven't achieved that state of peace. We are still experiencing high speed of terrorism, because most people think the more you kill terrorists, the more you are victorious. No, you don't achieve victory through the killing of terrorists. You achieve victory through the state of peace. So is there a state of peace in this region? The answer is the capital, no. Is there a state of peace in some of this African region, Nigeria, Chad, the Niger Republic, ravaged with terrorism? The answer is no. So the departure, for me, I think, it's not really going to be a major issue to this African continent, because the poor soldiers on ground are doing their best. They are fighting these guys head on. What we need to start looking at is achieving a state of peace and returning Africa to a state of peace.
Some are suggesting that the core reason Chad decided to sever or end the military cooperation is because the military regime, now the transitional team, appears not to trust France in the fight against the terrorists or in the overall objective of the military agreement or defense agreement with France. Your thoughts?
Chad had its own agreement with France. Well, I think an agreement can be broken if it's not a rigid agreement. I think all written agreements could be flexible
and rigid as well. So if Czech Republic have said that there is no much gain from this relationship, they have the right to take a flight from this relationship. Now, you and I agree that one or two African countries like the Mali, the Niger Republic and Chad now are being governed by a military regime. And these military guys, you know, want to, you know, impose discipline in their country. They want to just see that they could, you know, have a say in their own country and not being, you know, colonized, tactically colonized by other Western region. For me, I think the, you know, presence of France in most of this African region is tactical colonization. Let them go and let's see if Africa can stand alone, because I strongly believe that most of these African countries have the capability and capacity to stand alone, because the terrorist guys are not stronger than the state government or the federal government. So let it be and let's see what happens moving forward from now.
Dixon Osaji is a global security analyst. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Ghana, an ECOWAS court has awarded $10,000 compensation to a Belgian citizen who was deported from the country. Shalimar Abusi, a spokesperson for the political group called New Force, was arrested and deported over allegations that she forged documents which enabled her to stay in the country. In its ruling, the ECOWAS court determined that the Ghanaian authorities violated her rights. Critics of the administration say her deportation was politically motivated due to Abusi's criticisms of the government. Supporters of the administration reject the accusations. For more about the court's decision, I reach attorney Francis Sosu. He is the lead lawyer for Abusi.
We went to the ECOWAS court and requested that pursuant to Article 8.1 of the practice direction, the court would deliver a judgment in our favor in respect of the rearrest and detention of Shalima Abusi, who was a Belgian citizen associated with a political group in Ghana known as the New Force. And Shalima had been seen in various videos talking about the injustices and the misgovernance going on in Ghana. And based on that, she was invited by the Ghana Immigration Authority. Unfortunately, after she had responded to the invitation of the Immigration Authority, the invitation was converted into an arrest, and she was subsequently arraigned before a district magistrate court in Ghana.
But Francis, after the award granted as compensation by the court, what happens next? Because critics of the court have said that although it's a regional court, countries or member countries routinely ignore ruling or judgment by the court. So how are you going to enforce this?
Well, that's very, very correct, because I have been part of several seminars on the African court and then enforceability of its decision. Well, the African court is a community court. It's not even an appellate court to our local court. So Ghana is a signatory to the optional protocol that makes its decisions automatically binding. So we are hoping that, pursuant to the decision of the court, we are going to serve notice of the judgment on the Republic of Ghana and begin the processes of executing same. I'm hoping that the Attorney General, who I've seen in several international fora regarding the court, advocating that the court's judgment must be binding on the state, I'm hoping that they will respect the decision of the court and make sure they pay not only the compensation, but restore the status of Shalima, so that, we would see the seriousness of the court. Indeed, the current president of the African court is a Ghanaian, a court of appeal judge from Ghana. So it will be an indictment on the Republic of Ghana not to respect the regional court's decision when its own a person, Justice Asante, is the president of the ECOWAS court.
What's the next line of action of your client after she was deported from Ghana? Now that the ECOWAS court says her case is legitimate, a compensation has been granted, what does she plan to do?
Well, she definitely plans to give effect to the decision of the court by way of reapplying to the immigration authorities of Ghana. Obviously, because she's no more in Ghana, she may have to just do the normal processes of applying to seek for visas from Belgium back to Ghana. Before then, when she gets to Ghana, she can follow up on the compensation that was awarded to her. Not only that, because of the deportation, there were some private belongings and properties that she had interest in that she could not, deal with because of the manner in which she was removed from the country. So she would then take time to take care of all those things. But you would agree with me that the political temperature in Ghana right now may not be the right time because we have like elections in some few days. And so I'm sure when all this is done, definitely every step necessary to protect her rights, you know, as a human being and as someone who was on the soil of Ghana, we will make sure we take those steps to protect those rights.
Francis Sosu is the lawyer for Shalimar Abusi, a spokesperson for the political group called New Force. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Sahelian juntas are pressuring Western mining companies out of the region and partnering with Russia to fill the void. Niger recently invited Russia to explore its natural resources and confirmed communication with multiple Russian mining companies. Mali has also increased collaboration with Russia on exploiting oil, gas, uranium and lithium in 2024 and is taking an aggressive approach to Western mining companies through new tax laws and by arresting Western mining company employees. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, discussed this development with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shinawi.
So this is a long-term trend that's picked up speed since 2016 and then more speed in the last year or two. The long-term trend is a decolonization process in which some cases the Sahel countries turn away from France and turn towards almost anybody besides France to engage in their economic development and political assistance. It picked up steam around 2016 with the formation of the Wagner Group, and that was a bargain in which Russian paramilitary forces traded protection, Putschist regimes, usually anti-democratic and anti-Western regimes, in exchange for mineral rights. And at first, it was just things like iron and other, let's say, longer-term minerals. But it's increasingly moving in the direction of rare earths and other more lucrative mining opportunities for which there are discoveries going on in the Sahel. And the short-term aspect of this is the Ukraine war, in which Russia had to diversify its sources of plundering in order to support the war at the state budget. And that means literally stealing gold from Sudan and stealing rare earths from Sahel and sort of expanding these minerals for protection rackets into much greater plundering of local mineral resources to support the Russian war effort. And that has led to a really interesting situation in which Ukrainian special forces and Ukrainian weapons are coming into the Sahel to fight Russia. I've seen videos from Sudan and evidence from Mali, but across the region, because the more Russia can support its Ukraine war effort by plundering African mineral wealth at reduced cost, at the profit of the Kremlin, the longer this war goes against Ukraine. So it's a terrible situation in which nothing is happening in favor of the people of the Sahel. It's all about geopolitics.
Some experts say increased Russian mining access in the Sahel will boost Russia's economy and mitigate Western efforts to economically isolate Russia. The Kremlin pursuit of uranium also aims to increase its grip on the nuclear energy market to improve its leverage with countries seeking to cut Russia's energy purchases. What do you expect a Trump administration would do to counter this Russian strategy in the Sahel region?
The Trump administration from 16 to 20, they had a Sahel envoy, Peter Pham, who I know quite well, who tried quite hard to not only help the Sahel countries in any way he could, but and keeping the Sahel front and center in the Trump White House. But then the question is, what it often is in areas of brewing conflict, is your goal containment, or is it righting historical wrongs and investing? And there probably needs to be some of both. On the one hand, the states around the coup countries, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, where Putsch is in alliance with what used to be the Wagner Group, it's now called Africa Corps, are basically running the countries to the detriment of the people. But the countries around them aren't happy about it. Mauritania just complained very loudly. Senegal's been complaining for years. There's a lot of countries that would like help in stemming not just their terrorism threats, but the terrorism threats that are getting worse because of the neglect of terrorism. And so it's very important that all the countries that are pursuing a democratic route and open to a global economic rather than exclusive to Russia economic engagements get engagement and support. But back onto the coup countries, Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, and some other countries too, to some degree, Sudan and others. Chad had some bumpy politics and is also getting overtures from Russia. And there are other countries in the region too. There needs to be a full-on economic engagement that acknowledges the historical wrongs done by French colonialism and other historical wrongs, that then engages on the issues of poor treatment of the poor, of governance, of anti-corruption, and in the economic developments that these countries badly need. And that means actually putting money down. You can't just make everything about how Russia's eating your lunch and plundering the mineral resources. It has to be about, how do we help you develop in a way that you recognize is positive for your country? And that's not just the United States and not just France, but the West in general, to fill a void and supposedly to right a historical wrong.
William Lawrence is a professor of political science at the American University in Washington. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shinawi. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
No! Anema famina, no se magenyone, de puanya tiwo, no se magenyone, in anema famisua, no se magenyone, de puanya tiwo.
Jabala, jabula, jabala, familia tuwa sabula, jabala, yes we come so far away, jabala, oh gosh, jabala, that's the number of the foundation, eh, the foundation, the body bomb intimidation, intimidation, bakusazo kurete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, bari wange tumite. Bakusazo kurete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, baliwa nge tumite. Baliwa, 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 baba kubendere, baliwa, baliwa. Baliwa, baliwa, wali muyara nyo bakumembere, aliwa, baliwa. Wari akunchebere wari wabakube kebete wari wo hasla 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 get the people ngobula mu bamusibe njenge kati ya tola kuchitole bakusinza bakuita manya. They don't know where you come from safari ndefu tembea usiwe pala tembea safari ndefu tembea usiwe pala tembea bakusazo kurete bakusazo terete bakusazo nyirite ali wange tumite bakusazo kurete bakusazo terete bakusazo nyirite ali wange tumite panonga kuba pulani 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 banyomi baleta minzani. Yaronamu, Kenagamutu Yakonamu, Yarubiamu, Panka Tekamu, Toya Yarabuza Sentamu, Safari de Fontembea, Musiwe Pala Tembea, Safari de Fontembea, Musiwe Pala Tembea, Bakusazo Kurete, Bakusazo Terete, Bakusazo Nirite, Ariwange Turite, Bakusazo Kurete. Bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, bari wange kuite. Usogope mali zao, mwana kuita mwanao, mwana 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 ona bila navyopendao. Safari ndefu tembea, usiwe pala tembea, anapenda natembea. Waliu saba wasabula. Bakusazo kurete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, ali wange tubite. Bakusazo kurete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, ali wange tubite.
cœur de l'amour qui pleure. Femme. Double King.
Motema peme ya farina. Isale langa gato ya bonheur. C'est à moi seulement mes bendingini miango.
Ale kiki to kone 18%.
Est-ce que ma boko na itende tangisa? Isale soso na wiki diki. Fleur rose zanga mbuma. Me bato bani ma risque ya ba épine. Et bon noyo flore avec ma fruit. Ba épine pe sève na yo miel. Na fruta donje ya monte na soyo. Tala ba cicatrice a bolingo. Yo kanga mba wei.
Yakali
Papousin basale la malili na pokwa Motalia ki mama na bango na tongo Sokya bwa ke li bango loso Aza moto mara moto mabe Mobo mia someli e bende serke ya talo Eske zate fason ko senga pardon Cheri ko zala bongote Oya nga moteme komi utatoli Ezala moto la mort Azeli karesu bambi kayas Sokyo poyelina amour Luka compagnie crash airline Una bate kakabine ya dieu Soma ya business class na kufa luxueusement Sandre nanga batiango na boka Avant bokanga pardon tia soya yo Ezala poto poto ya bulingo Loko la mulunge moto amoni piscine Na papa na Saint James Evans
BMC mon annuelle
Que mon pépé Wazoluka
Estaciona Kae Peyozali Isako absorbé par feu Yasuki Nayo
Après Kabolango Namboka Ba malade va pema son bonbonne Ba namba bikana maladie de la peau Yosa mystérieuse Tu y apportes la joie Nazanga Yona Koko Fay Gayo Foley Ami
Charles Tabou Toutouro bas Joseph Berthier.
Pas exceptionnel, Potico confondrié. Soki magoro le ou. Basu pas sa bande que la panzete. Mamouma eko toman kele a colia. Kobukango, je doute fort. Le colonna posa maï me va servir en bon apport. Atezaya si kaye. O coco tachuma. Discussion moke, soif et ekimi.
Elvis a dit Dima Olivier Bilard.
Botika koti mola kao. Mpobo luka misi saya sapin. Bermo tiena pain pobo pesa lapa. Akoli a te alina kabagran. Wana oyo yaye festin. Yanga se bolingo na yo.
That was music from the continent and we hope you enjoyed it.
Est-ce que mon amour n'est pas plus fort que mon erreur? Demeure dans mon cœur, pour Yosawangai à ma soeur.
Chibo Mabe Koti, Gunther Mabe Koti.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer The Great Nashwan, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, you cannot throw stones into the river and expect the water to remain calm. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Hey, hey. Bébé na mama na kaka yo na kozonga na mes et toi mon amour pour toujours bébé 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 bébé
vitamine à l'envers na na yo zawapi bébé mon amour tu me manques trop poli moi koni lokola moi no ya béni quoi j'en prends azonga ya zongela santé na ye mon bébé